This is Greg Lozinski, and you're listening to Baseball BBQ.
From the studios of Baseball and BBQ on Long Island, New York, this is episode number 198 of Baseball and BBQ, where the BBQ stands for
Bar-B-Q.
I'm Jeff, the old Coot Cohen, along with Leonard Hollywood Aberman. We welcome you back to our show, Leonard.
Let me just put on my deep announcer voice, Jeff, as I say, welcome. And episode 198. Oh, Jeff, I say it every week and I mean it every week. What a show. Jeff, we have Emily Kless.
Yes.
Who happens to be the niece of our dear friends, Doreen and Jeff Strauss.
But where does she work?
She works for the MLB Players Association after working for a number of years at Topps.
So she's got stories.
Oh, yeah. She's got nice stories. And then we have Raymond Sheehan, who happens to be the son of our friend Ray Sheehan. And he is part of the future of Q. Oh, and if you listen to last episode with Kel Phelps, you know all about the future of Q. And we talk to Raymond all about his music career, which he's trying to work on, and his writing career as he is a writer for the future of Q. So we're going to get to all of that. Plus, you and I had a very special adventure. But let me just tell everybody that BetOnline is your number one source for all your betting needs. Get the latest odds, lines, and matchup reports for baseball, boxing, golf, and more. BetOnline continues to be the fastest and easiest way to place your wagers, including live betting and your favorite casino and card games available to play right from your home. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and get in on the action. Remember to use promo code BLEAV. That's BLEAV for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet online, it's where the game starts. Jeff, why don't you kick it off by telling everyone about the adventures of baseball and barbecue at City Field?
Yes, we traveled west.
We went west, young man.
The City Field. You know, our friend Gary Kaschuk, he wrote a book with Ed Kranepool called The Last Miracle, obviously with Ed Kranepool, and they had a book signing over at City Field. So we decided, let's go and check it out. So I, on a hunch, I just asked the Mets for some press credentials, and lo and behold, they gave us some press credentials. So we were fortunate. Go to the Met game, meet with Ed Kranepool, saw Gary Kaschuk. But, Len, what else did we do?
Well, we got media passes, and we were treated like royalty. And we went out on the field, and you pointed out, actually, Brody Van Wagenen was there.
Yes.
We conversed with Brody, and we also spoke to the Cubs manager, which was fantastic. David Ross is on the field, and I like this story. You and I were like, we got to ask David Ross a question. You know, we're members of the media. We got to ask him a question. But, you know, what question hasn't David Ross been asked a million times before? Well, I'll tell you one. He has not been asked about barbecue in Chicago.
That's right.
And when we asked him a question, he looked and he sees we're media members. And he says, okay. And we said, we want to ask you a question on barbecue. I think he was shocked. And yes. We asked him, where do you like to eat in Chicago? And he actually said he liked, what was it, Smoke? Yeah, barbecue in Chicago. And I think we may be the only reporters, media members, whatever you want to call it, or anyone that's ever asked him about barbecue.
Yes.
That was fun. So we're on the field. And then, Jeff, where'd we go?
Well, we went up to the press box and checked that out. We actually did watch the game from the press box. And by the way, they had a 2-hour rain delay. So we didn't get home till after 1 o'clock in the morning. So it was it was a long night. But, you know, we did meet some people. We did see some. I mean, we met Joe Girardi. He was broadcasting for the Cubs. We did see Steve Gelbs. So anybody who watches Met games know who Steve Gelbs is. But we also, when we were waiting to see Ed Cranepool, we were online because we weren't going to be bougie and cut the line. We met a friend of ours, an acquaintance, Tom Clark. And we got reacquainted with him. And then we met another podcaster, Bill Donahue. I mean, it's unbelievable how many people we meet. Colin Cosell. We had a great conversation with Colin Cosell.
Yeah. Grandson of Howard Cosell. Of course, Colin is a former guest on this show. You and Gary Mack did an interview with him. And he had a new baby, a new baby girl, 4-month-old. And he was showing us pictures. We're standing there and Colin Cosell, you know, we're not talking baseball. Like we would, you know, we talk barbecue, you know, with David Ross. Colin showing us pictures of his kid because, you know, he's proud of her.
Proud daddy, sure.
Yeah, of course. And she is a cutie. She is really cute. We want to thank him. The rain delay took two. They started the game again at 11:15. It was a 2-hour, 9-minute delay. I think you just said that. But it was a delay we didn't mind so much. I'm sure the reporters and the players and everyone else hated it. But we went into the lounge where they eat. And there is Keith Hernandez, Ron Darling, Joe Girardi, and they're all just sitting there. And they're actually talking about something that happened during a game somewhere else that night.
Well, let's get to that because it was disgusting what happened. It was an Orioles announcer who was suspended for telling the absolute truth. He was talking about how hard it was for the Orioles to win in Tampa. They showed a graphic. And for that, now the Orioles are doing well and they're playing well and they finally won a series in Tampa. And the Orioles suspended them. That's what they were talking about. And when you read the article, what happened was, it's unbelievable that a young, talented announcer that was suspended because he was doing his job.
Yeah. By the way, when we were in the press box, we had the chance to talk to Anthony DiComo, who is a reporter for the Mets. You know, talk to him about his work with the Mets and how much we enjoyed it. And he also former guest. I mean, it was, you know, what was so much fun was just like former guest. You know,
we saw Ed Randall, one of our first guests.
That's right. And told us about some things that his charity Fans for a Cure or Fans for the Cure.
Fans for a Cure. Yes.
Yeah. Are going to be doing. So that was exciting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we really want to thank the Mets organization for making two podcasters feel like we were important people. Oh, and Jeff, here's something else. I met Mrs. Met. And I've got a crush.
Of course you do. Who doesn't?
I mean, yeah. I fist bumped Mrs. Met. Uh-huh. Fist bumping is okay, right? Yeah. That's not cheating, is it?
No, it's okay.
Okay, thank you. So I fist bumped Mrs. Met. And yeah, it was just a wonderful experience. Probably we'll think of some more things that happened. But it is surreal kind of when you're in the press box, because right outside, you hear the fans going crazy. And that was a game. Alonso hits 2 home runs. Mednick gets his first home run. They win the game 11-2. And obviously, when the rain delay was over, there were basically no fans in the seats, but they were ahead by a lot before that. So there was a lot to cheer. But when you're in that press box, nobody's cheering. You know, okay. They're all, everyone's doing their job. And you and I, being Met fans, we just had to sit there and kind of like just keep our excitement down because.
Yeah, of course.
Portion.
Of course. Of course. So that was it. So why don't we get to our interview with Emily Kless? Emily Kless is the senior manager for social media at the Major League Baseball Players Association. Prior to her current position, she spent over 5 years working at the Topps Company as a marketing communications manager. She has created video content with Cal Ripken Jr., Ryan Sandberg, Fergie Jenkins, Juan Soto, a guy named Derek Jeter, Chipper Jones, called Ripping Packs. Emily also happens to be the niece of our dear friends Doreen and Jeff. Welcome to Baseball and BBQ, Emily Kless.
Wow, what an intro. I don't know how I'm going to be able to top some of the names on that list.
Especially Doreen and Jeff.
Yes. That's exactly it. Yeah, family first. No, I'm honored to be here, guys. Thanks so much for having me.
You're welcome.
We're honored to have you. As a matter of fact, I was just watching today a YouTube video of you with a pack of cards with none other than Don Mattingly.
I think yes.
1984 pack of cards, and you were going through each one. And as I'm watching it and you're asking him questions, and they were exceptional questions, and I'm thinking to myself, you know what? Maybe Emily will, first of all, there's a lot of pressure when you interview someone who does interviews, right?
Sure.
And then second, maybe we'll turn the table and you could interview us.
I'm sure the both of you have plenty of stories. We might need to make this three episodes if that happens.
But how is that? You know, you're sitting there with Don Mattingly opening a pack of Topps baseball cards, and he's going through all the players that he played with. I think Claudel Washington was one. I think Rod Carew was in the pack, I think. How is that, Emily?
Yeah, well, listen, so we came up with this series while during my time at Topps, and we were just starting to really spin up our content and get into the video content space. And, you know, we kind of thought, hey, what's better than sitting down and ripping open a pack of baseball cards? Everyone from a Hall of Famer to an 8-year-old loves to do that, right? There's like this childlike wonder that you have when you rip open a pack of baseball cards. And so, you know, with all of the events that Topps was holding that had, you know, talent such as Don Mattingly and Ryan Sandberg and Derek Jeter, we thought to ourselves, well, let's utilize this time to sit down and create some episodes, and dubbed it Ripping Packs. And, you know, it just kind of took off from there, which was really neat. So, yeah, I've got to open up some baseball cards with a lot of amazing people. But what's so funny about baseball cards and being in that setting is it really allows you to just have such a casual conversation with a lot of these, you know, Hall of Famers or the game's greats. So it's not so much, you know, the pressure of a sit down interview and you're asking questions, but, you know, the packs almost lead the interview, or I should rather say the cards that come out of the packs lead the interview, which is a really, you know, interesting kind of take on creating this type of video content. And so whatever comes out of the pack, maybe the guy's played with him, maybe he knows him, maybe he doesn't, and you just kind of riff the conversation from there. But so neat to especially with a lot of the retired guys, right? They the baseball cards instantly bring them back, the bubble gum, you know, putting them in the spokes of their bike. I mean, the stories just kind of start flowing from there. So you know, Cal Ripken was a great one. I can't have a favorite episode because we've had so many great people that, you know, we had the pleasure to rip open baseball cards with at Topps. But yeah, definitely, you know, such a wonderful experience for myself and, you know, professionally growing in my career and getting to meet, you know, just the legends of the game. It was unbelievable.
So I know this is audio only, but look what I got here. A pack of Topps baseball cards, 2023.
Oh, there we go. Now, when I was two, fresh off the press.
When I was a kid, I got a pack of baseball cards. There was a lot more than this. it was a lot cheaper. This was $4, which I can't believe. But I'm gonna rip this open.
Let's do it. Let's see who you get.
All right.
Oh wow! You sure you don't want to save it for like 30 years?
I'm sure. Which I, by the way, I do have some of those as well. Can't see.
We're audio only here. Yeah. Baseball cards are so visual. So exactly. Let's see who we got. Martin Maldonado. Yeah, that's
Maldonado. Yes.
Those Go ahead.
No, Emily, you're the guest. I just was going to say it doesn't have to be audio only because it is Zoom. So if we choose, we could release it video. So maybe we will.
We have to do the baseball cards justice that way.
Except I'm not doing the editing that way. So, but finally, I finally got a Met in here. Kodai Senga. It's a new card.
Nice.
So you would just have conversations with these people, whoever you're interviewing, and the conversation would flow, as you were saying. That's pretty cool.
That's exactly right. And you know what we did too was we kind of looked at it and said, hey, you know, with a guy like Mattingly, for example, or even Jeter, right? We opened up packs that were relevant to them. So that way we were either, you know, chasing Jeter's rookie card to see if Derek Jeter would pull his own rookie card, or Mattingly with the, you know, iconic Topps 1984 design and, you know, Mattingly in that set. So we tried to really make it relevant to these guys. So that way, you know, you're bringing them back to oftentimes the first time they saw themselves on a baseball card. And no matter who you ask, it's really neat because they all kind of say, hey, when I saw myself on a card for the first time, that's when I know I made it, right? When this baseball card, it just kind of legitimizes you as a baseball player. It has such a unique, you know, ability to make anyone feel like, wow, I'm a big league star. I'm seeing myself on a baseball card. And so I think that's a really unique and just humbling aspect to something as simple as a 2.5 by 3.5 piece of cardboard. But you know, it was really just kind of cool to watch these guys, you know, really get brought back into like, wow, this is when I was first coming up. And you know, fast forward however many years later, and we've got guys, you know, like Fergie Jenkins and Chipper Jones and Ryne Sandberg and all, you know, these amazing names, but bringing them back to really, you know, some of their first years of their career was just a neat experience and kind of something that, you know, they don't get very often with a lot of those media type of commitments. And so it was a lot of fun for them, which made it a lot of fun for us.
You know, I did go to Mets Fantasy Camp a couple of years ago. One of the best things I got was my own baseball card.
There you go. Wow.
You know what that's worth?
Yeah, exactly. Not worth the cardboard it's printed on.
So you need to put that in a penny sleeve and preserve it.
Exactly.
Careful with the corners there.
Emily, obviously you're a big baseball fan to get in your position, but do you get in awe, you know, interviewing, you know, talking to these players, these Hall of Famers? Do you get a sense of awe doing that?
I don't know if awe is necessarily the word, but I have an immense appreciation for who these guys are and what they did. To be able to compete at the level that they competed for the amount of years that they competed at that level, it takes a really certain kind of person and athlete to be able to do that. And I think, you know, we look at baseball oftentimes as such a casual sport, maybe not as physically demanding as some of the other sports that we love in America. But man, to be on the road for, you know, half the year and the grind that you go through, and guys, you know, they get called up and sent back down. There's a lot of ups and downs to a baseball career. And you just have to be, you know, the longevity that some of these players have had to stay in the game and again, compete at the most elite level for so long. I think you just really have to have an appreciation for that. And, so, but you know, at the same time, they're people like me and you, and that's the fun part about it. And that's, I think, you know, with baseball cards specifically, it really kind of broke the ice of, you know, I can open a pack of baseball cards the same way that, you know, Derek Jeter can open a pack of baseball cards or whoever else, you know, we sat down with. So I think that was just a cool thing that, you know, no matter who you are, like I said, Hall of Famer or not, you get this just giddiness and like childlike wonder opening up a pack. And it kind of, it really humanized a lot of these guys. So, you know, awe, not necessarily, but immense appreciation for the type of person and athlete you have to be to just stay at the top of your game and make such an impact on the game for that many years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we've had. Sorry, Jeff. Go ahead.
I said, I know I still get a sense of awe when Len and I speak to some of the people. Like last week, we spoke to Ron Say of the Los Angeles Dodgers, way before your time, I know. But he was a great third baseman for the Dodgers. And we spoke to even a journeyman like Nelson Figueroa, who's been up and down, like you were talking about. Just because they were in the major leagues, I mean, they might not have been a superstar, Hall of Famer, but just to make it there, it says something.
Of course. I mean, the list is only so long of how many major leaguers there have been in baseball history, right? That list is only so long. So it's neat. And I think that's one thing that I really love about being at the Players Association as well, is you really are working on behalf of the players. And to see what these guys, you know, put in, the type of dedication that it takes to be, especially now in the world that we live in, the way the league is now. I mean, it takes really an insane amount of dedication into your craft, and these guys do it, you know, day in, day out, 365. So, you know, that's what I love about the Players Association as well. You know, being here is really working on behalf of the players, and these guys deserve that.
Yeah, we're definitely going to get to your current job, but we have to hit upon the tops, the baseball card. Excuse me. And what I was going to mention before, we had someone on talk about opening a pack of cards. We had the Wax Pack is the book. Jeff, who wrote the Wax Pack? All of a sudden, I can't remember the guy's name.
Brian Buchlian.
I think so. But all of a sudden, I'm Googling it. I got to see. But it's called The Wax Pack. And he opens this. Brad Baluchin.
Right.
Opens this pack of cards. Emily, maybe you've heard of it, the book. But he opens this pack.
Yeah, I believe it sounds familiar. I don't know if I'm familiar with the author, though.
He goes to, and he contacts all the players. And I think he only missed one. Traveled across the country.
That person was deceased. That's why you miss him. But he did.
Okay, that's not funny. But
he did find those players who were willing to talk to him and wrote about his experience.
Yeah. And then we of course had another person on, Tanner Jones, who is a big baseball card collector. So it is really amazing with the cards and like you said, the emotions. And it's also now when I was growing up, I don't remember any other companies other than Topps. I know later on there were a couple of other companies. They'll remain nameless. But there's definitely something about Topps also. It's just the name in cards. And I remember you had the Wax Pack, you know, but then if I had a little extra money, there was like a it was like a plastic three pack, and I would get that. And you could see
the rack packs.
Yeah, you could actually see the one card that you were going to get on each, I think each of the two or three. So I would like look and see, oh, do I want this one? Do I want this one? And you'd pick it out, and at least you'd know that you get a couple of cards, you know, that you needed, you wanted. But see, I was never a baseball card in the spokesperson. That I never did. Jeff,
Jeff?
No, I was flipping baseball cards.
Yeah.
Just as bad for the edges, right?
Exactly.
I mean, you're so right too. And I think that baseball cards are really the unique thing about collecting in general is that you can do it in your own way, right? There's not a right way to collect baseball cards. There's not a wrong way really to collect baseball cards. And so it's a hobby that you can easily make your own. And it was neat working at Topps because everyone there loved what they did or what they do. I have many friends still at Topps, and it's fun to watch, even just like watching the designers create the cards and our product team and our brand team actually choose who was going to be on the subject list and why they were. And then you see it all come to life, and then we bring it to social, and then we have players ripping open the packs themselves. You know, it's just like, it was such a unique kind of place to be. And no matter where you went, whether it was events like MLB All-Star Game or some of the private events that we held with our big time collectors, everyone had that same feeling about baseball cards. And yeah, there's a lot of nostalgia there. I mean, Topps was in the game for 70 plus years, right? Topps is baseball cards in essence. And so I think the nostalgia there, it's tough to create that for a brand, and Topps really just has the people that are loyalists to it, which is just so neat. And you know, it's of course extends beyond baseball, and I know that we are strictly baseball and barbecue here, but it goes to Formula One and soccer, whether that's Champions League or you know, MLS, and it just extends, you know, Star Wars, even, you know, WWE, Garbage Pail Kids, if we're gonna go back to real nostalgia. So it's just neat the brands that Topps has been able to partner with and just give such joy to people no matter what they like. There was kind of something for everyone to collect, and that was the really neat part about Topps. And I think I learned so much about other sports and entertainment and what have you that way, because it was just, you know, when you're surrounded by it and you see all of the brilliant products that the folks at Topps are able to create, it's just a really unique thing.
Now, Emily, some of the cards are worth, it's like Captain Obvious here, but some of the cards are worth tons of money.
You bet.
Yeah, payday comes. You know what? You don't have to pay me this week. I'll take a Joe DiMaggio rookie card.
Exactly. Although that would probably gain a lot more interest than my paycheck ever would. But yeah, I mean, you know, it was every time they would, you know, gift the employees some product at the end of the quarter, what have you, I always brought them home to open with my dad. So, you know, it was just such a cool place to be, because you get to enjoy it. You get to watch other people enjoy it. You just kind of spread it around, the love of baseball cards. But yeah, I mean, cards are, there's a pretty hefty market out there for it, especially, you know, the prospects, those who have yet to even step foot on a major league's field. It's pretty remarkable the way that the hobby has just taken off, a lot of part in due to COVID. People found themselves at home, you know, with nothing to do and rummaging through their attic, and they bring out their old shoebox of baseball cards, and it kind of skyrocketed for us in 2020. So it was a really, really interesting time to be part of, you know, Topps and watch it all grow. But yeah, it's kept going in that direction, which is really great to see.
And what are your thoughts on a Shohei Ohtani card and its value at this point?
Well, it depends. Is he batting or pitching, right? I mean,
yeah. Does he have two cards?
I'm sure he does. I'm sure they show him one way and the other. The neat part about, I don't know if it was, it must have been last year's product. I think it was 2022 Series 1. He was our cover athlete, and so we had him both hitting and pitching on the cover of the box, which is just, you know, really neat. But he's an unbelievable player. And I got the, you know, privilege of watching him play during the World Baseball Classic this year. I'm not sure if you guys followed along with WBC at all. But wow, what an amazing, amazing event that was. I was out in Phoenix for the first, you know, pool part of it. And then I came to Miami for the quarterfinals that were being held there onwards into the finals. And watching the, you know, the international media around Shohei, it was just, wow, it was unbelievable. I mean, he really walks on water, you know, and for good reason, right? He's like a generational player. But yeah, seeing him at World Baseball Classic was just a really kind of eye-opening in a way, because you see a whole nother part of the world enjoy baseball the way that we Americans enjoy baseball, but they do so, you know, differently. And even in warmups, right? Watching the Japan team warm up versus the Venezuela team versus the USA team. Every team kind of had their own flair and style and way of going about the game. And it was just completely fascinating to me. So yeah, he was unbelievable to watch during WBC. And that was a really great experience.
Yeah, I was at Angels training camp a couple of years ago, and he was there, and the media really followed him around, like, is right on And you mentioned the WBC, which was a great event this year, except it ripped the hearts out for us Mets fans. That one, we still can't get over it. Anyway.
Yeah, he's going to come back stronger, though. I'm sure of it. The game is a better place with him in it. So I know that he'll come back stronger for it. But yeah, definitely Team Puerto Rico felt that one, as did Mets fans and a lot of us in baseball. I mean, you just don't want to see someone go down like that. But I know that he'll come back stronger. The trumpets will be blaring again. So I'm not worried about Edwin.
I wanted to ask you, I mean, when I was a kid, Lennon was talking about, you know, buying a baseball card at the candy store and ripping them open. It was great. But as the years come by, you know, the hobby has changed. And now I can go online. And now how does collecting, you know, change today? I mean, I know that it's digital now. I mean, explain to us how that works.
If I could explain to you how digital collecting works, I might have a, you know, better internet connection here. But you know, I think it was interesting because when I actually first began at Topps, I started in our digital division where we owned and operated, you know, mobile apps where you can trade digital trading cards right from your phone. The Topps digital division, I was a community manager there, and it was so fascinating to see the way that people really, you know, saw their digital collection as, you know, even though it wasn't a tangible type of thing, there's a real ownership aspect to it, like collecting anything, right? The ownership that you feel and the pride that you feel for what you can say is yours. I think that doesn't matter if it's digital or physical. There's just a lot of pride that people take in their collection and what they collect and why, and, you know, scoring that card you've been looking for, or feeling like you made out well in a trade, whatever it might be. So yeah, Topps is, you know, they also dip their toes in NFTs, which is really cool to see, especially as NFTs exploded over the past couple of years. So it's fascinating the way that, you know, the digital landscape has evolved, you know, alongside collecting. And then on the contrary, how different it is in physical cards, the way that, you know, people, the mentality people have about it. But, you know, like I said before, there's no one way to collect, which is why collecting cards is neat. You could be a set collector, right? You could collect the physical card and then its digital, you know, counterpart in the Topps Bunt app or any of the, you know, whatever sport or entertainment property you might be collecting. So some people like to collect both the physical and the digital, and that's a point of pride in that. So it's really neat, and it's just such a unique thing that I think, you know, as soon as you get into it, you get hooked on it a little bit, right? There's like this rush that you feel when you open a pack. Like I said, you score that card or that player, right? Jeff, you're like, hey, oh, yeah. I got a Met in here. I mean, it's cool to kind of have that. You're like that surprise and delight element every single time, whether it's physical or digital. So I think that's the neat part about opening cards is you just never know what's going to be in your pack.
Since we're reminiscing here, I mean, like Lynn was saying, when we bought the card, like say 1978, we were going to the candy store, you're buying 1978 cards, that year's card. However, when I bought this pack today, I went to this hobby shop. It was a lot of baseball and other collectibles. They had year after year after year, prior years, and the prices were all crazy. I mean, it doesn't matter what year it is now. They'll sell you any card from any year.
Yeah. And you know, it's kind of funny because when we were searching for packs for our series ripping packs, and you were oftentimes searching for such a specific year, whether that be like 1984, right, with Don Mattingly or 92 with Jeter. And so it was kind of an interesting, like, wild goose chase to be able to hunt down some of these very specific packs of cards. You know, and then we tried to get some older packs in the 60s and really like in the more beginning of Topps. I've ripped open a pack of 1952 Topps, which was like just a really cool thing because it's like, wow, this thing has been in here for 50, 60, 70, you know, however many years. I mean, it's so cool that some of this stuff sits and remains unopened. I forget the exact year we ripped with Chipper Jones, but I mean, a piece of gum fell out of his pack and, you know, basically was so hard and stale, it just shattered right on the table. Didn't take much. But yeah, the, you know, people hold on to them still. And some people, you know, refuse to open them because they just want to preserve it for exactly what it is.
Yeah, they had that. I guess they don't have it anymore. I haven't opened a pack of cards in so long, but there was the smell of the gum when you open the pack of cards, right? That
exactly.
It's gone. But Jeff, who else is in that pack? You said Cody Senga. You said there's 24 in that pack?
16, I think.
Oh, 16, and it was $4?
Michael Wacha, Ahmad Rosario, Logan Gilbert, Jake Fraley, who I never heard of, Fierro Estrada. So yeah, there's a couple of good guys in here.
Yeah, Cody Senga, that's his rookie card, so that might be worth something. But
that might be worth something, exactly.
Emily, does Topps then, like, do they have a vault where they keep unopened packs of cards for this specific reason?
You know, it's funny. Everyone imagines Topps as like a Willy Wonka sort of place where there's just this magical factory with a museum like, you know, aspect to it. And it's not that at all, which is unfortunate to have to break that news to people that it's just, you know, your run of the mill office building with a couple more baseball cards than normal. So, no, there's not quite a, you know, a vault of sorts that in the way that you're imagining. So we had to dig into our marketing budget to buy some packs of cards to create our ripping pack series with. So, you know, go out to the local hobby shops or find some packs on eBay if we're looking for a specific year. So yeah, it's a, but changed locations since I had left Topps and Fanatics, you know, acquired Topps. So they've changed locations in the city, but you know, they used to be down in Whitehall, Battery Park area. And one of my favorite parts of the office was the card wall. So essentially spanning, you know, across this wall was just slots in essence that you could kind of take a card and leave a card, right? Like take a penny, leave a penny. And so you can go up to the wall and see something you like and replace it with a card that maybe you wanted to, you know, get rid of from your collection. And that was a really neat part about the office that I don't think you'd find in many other office buildings in Manhattan.
Emily, what's the most expensive, most valuable card that you ever held in your hands?
That is a great question. You know, it's funny because as we're oftentimes, as we were packing for some of our, you know, higher end events, and you're sitting there with just, you know, trying to dole out cards at, you know, at random, you don't know which guest is going to get which gift bag. And you're sitting there with Jeter autos and Ken Griffey Jr. And, you know, the list kind of goes on and on and on. So I'm sure that there's probably a Jeter card at the end of the day that's likely been one of the most expensive that I've held. You know, after leaving Topps for a very brief period of time, I went to Golden Auctions, very large collectible site that, you know, pretty much the premier in sports card collectibles. And, you know, really Ken Golden is a fascinating guy and has just completely built this company from the ground up. And it was, you know, my time there was short-lived, but the people there are great. And I think one of the cards I held there was actually a basketball card, and it was a triple logo man. So it had, you know, three logo, NBA logo from a jersey, from, I can't remember if it was Jordan and LeBron, and they threw a couple other guys in there. So one of the triple logo man cards, and then all of a sudden you see it up for auction and it's like hundreds of thousands of dollars. And you're like, man, I just held that in my hand. So yeah, that likely is probably one of the most expensive I've held. But I have a ton of cards in my collection still just from being around, you know, Topps and the events that we had. And, you know, some of them I will never let go of just because they mean so much more to me than probably what they would be worth on eBay or whoever wants them. Because you have those memories that are tied to them, especially with a lot of the event exclusive stuff we've done and the events that we've held. So definitely have some cool cards in my collection, and they're not going anywhere anytime soon.
You know, you just mentioned Golden Auctions, and I didn't realize you worked there for a little bit. But I've been watching on Netflix this week this thing is called King of Collectibles.
How great is that show?
Fascinating. Although I do have a question. I wanted to ask Ken Golden. You know, they showed how somebody got a Kobe Bryant game used world championship jersey. I mean, it's going to go for a lot of money, but I want to know how the guy who got it, how did he get it?
Yeah, those are the stories that are fascinating, yeah. Right? Like, how did you end up with this? Where did this come from? Like I said, my time there was short-lived because I really wanted to get back into the baseball space, I realized, and less into the collectible space after leaving Topps. And so it was kind of just a career decision that I made. Like I said, the people there were great, and Ken is an awesome guy. Just completely fascinating what people, you know, how people obtain these incredibly rare objects, whether that's baseball, you know, cards or trophies or medals from the Olympics or game used jerseys or a pair of sneakers. I mean, there's so much out there. And then on the flip side of that, there's so much that people are willing to collect as well. There's so much history that people, you know, want to hang on to. I think probably one of the coolest items that I've held, you know, while at Golden was Bobby Bonilla's contract, held the piece of paper of his contract. And that was just super cool. It's amazing the kind of stuff that people, you know, want to collect and people find value in. And great show. My friend Alex is the host of it, and she's great. The whole crew there is really good people. So I moving on from collectibles was, you know, a bit of a career decision. And then I missed baseball so much that I wanted to be really back as part of the game again, the way that, you know, Topps was really close to the game. And so position opened up at the MLBPA where I had previously interned right when I was fresh out of college. And it left such a profound impact on me, my internship at the PA. I was in the communications department. It was during a year of collective bargaining. So it was between 2015, 2016. And it was also during a year where they were celebrating their 50th anniversary. So a lot of really unique things happened during my year of this postgraduate internship. And I always said to myself, if an opportunity ever came up again to go back to the PA, I would jump on it. And that's exactly kind of what happened, which was great timing. For me, but I have now been here at the PA since October, and it's just been a whirlwind in such a good way. There's been so many events that I've gotten to go to thus far. Like I mentioned, World Baseball Classic. I just got back the other day from our London series, which was really neat to see baseball, you know, played across the pond. So lots of great stuff. And then I'm off shortly for MLB All-Star next Thursday, a week from today. Which will not be relevant when this podcast drops, because I know we don't know when it's dropping. So I know we don't like to talk about time on podcasts, but lots of great events that I've gotten to be a part of, and I'm really thankful for that.
Well, you know, Emily, maybe you need to take us with you, because you know we are baseball and barbecue, and we should be at all of these events.
I couldn't agree more. We, you guys should come out to Seattle. We'll do it on the West Coast. Yeah. And maybe Julio Rodriguez will end up on this podcast.
You know, you're talking about sports memorabilia. And we actually had on the great granddaughter of Doc Adams, who is, you know, first written rules of baseball, created the invented the shortstop position. So we had Marjorie Adams on. And amazing that she's the great granddaughter of Doc Adams. And we talked about that. She explained it in the interview. Unfortunately, she's passed away a couple of years ago. But the written rules of baseball that he wrote down, and that are just on, paper that looks like it's just out of a grade school notebook, but she got to see them. She said she didn't own them, unfortunately. I think they sold for $1.2 million. And I think she said the only thing that sold higher was like something with Babe Ruth. She made a joke. She said, "How many pairs of pants did that man have?"
Yeah, and how many people claim to have them as well, right?
But it's
that's unbelievable. Right? It sounds like a bargain someone got on the original written rules.
Yeah, I think that's how much it went for. But all this memorabilia, and then of course you see now the players that are signing things, and they're selling all these things that are. It's crazy how much all this is going for, and there's a market for it.
Yeah, of course. I mean, listen, there's nothing more powerful for a player than his name, image, likeness, right? I mean, that's the cool part about the Players Association is we protect that and we help advance that as well. You know, with all of the licensing opportunities and sponsorship deals that we bring in. So, you know, if these guys, if they do it right, they build themselves a brand and they have followers. I mean, social media is so powerful now and that they could really use that as a vehicle to, you know, extend their brand. And listen, people are willing to pay a lot of money because at the end of the day, they're the product, right? They're the reason for the game, the players. So it's really, you know, fascinating to see. And yeah, I'm sure a lot of them, you know, at first when you see yourself on a baseball card, it's really neat. And then 50,000 autographs later, it's not so neat anymore. But, and then you see how guys, they change their signatures over the year. They get shorter and shorter and shorter just, to get through more signatures. So, it's cool to see. And, you know, I have to admit, I think, Mariano Rivera's signature is the most beautiful thing I have ever witnessed in person. It is just smooth, and seeing him sign a baseball card was it was like poetry in motion. Really neat. So some guys are a bit of a scribble, but I will give it to Mariano Rivera. He takes time with his autographs and it shows.
Before we get back to your current position, I just wanted to ask you, a few years back you were involved in Topps National Baseball Card Day. Could you tell us what that was about?
Yeah, so every year in August, I believe it's like the first Saturday of August, Topps celebrated National Baseball Card Day. And it, you know, became bigger and bigger and bigger. A lot of hobby shops would participate. It was really a way for Topps to promote hobby shops during a time where a lot of people are not necessarily going to their local card shop. Except for the three of us, of course, but, you know, people are online buying if they're buying cards, they're online or what have you. So it was really a way to get people into their local hobby shop. And it kind of, you know, took off from there. MLB started backing it. There was giveaways in stadiums. And then within the past couple of years, we, you know, in an effort to make it much bigger, we created the Topps truck tour. And so we had this ice cream truck looking vehicle that we wrapped in, I can't remember, maybe 11,000 baseball cards, entirely wrapped in baseball cards. And we had it drive around as really this pop-up activation. And it went from, you know, stadium to stadium with however many stops in the first couple of years. And it gave away, you know, free packs of cards, and it just really promoted National Baseball Card Day. And so, yeah, it was, it's a cool thing. We had the Topps truck through New York City during the actual day of National Baseball Card Day. We had it outside the MLB store, which was really cool. Yeah, got to ride in it as it went from, you know, outside of the Fox and Friends studio, because we did a live hit on the truck on National Baseball Card Day a couple of years ago. And so and then we had to get it over to the MLB store. So got to ride in the truck. Good thing they did not let me drive it, though, because I think we would have I don't know if we would have had the marketing budget for the tickets I would have gotten in that thing. But yeah, it was, you know, just cool. And, you know, I mean, it's such a, you know, a unique thing to see when you're driving down the road or walking down the street in New York, and all of a sudden there is a truck wrapped in baseball cards. It's a cool thing. But that's National Baseball Card Day in a nutshell. It's really a promotion to get people into their local hobby shop. And I think it's grown and grown and grown, which is great to see.
Emily, the other night I'm at the Mets game, and it was Indiana Jones. It was Mr. Met dressed as Indiana Jones bobblehead giveaway, right? First 15,000 fans got a bobblehead. And they go in and you get your bobblehead. And as I hadn't even gone like 5 feet ahead and somebody said, I'll buy that from you. And then somebody else was like, is there any way you could get, you know, another bobblehead? And so that was for a bobblehead. Have you ever had anyone ask you to, you know, get a card for them, or, you know, say, I'll give you money, but I want to get a so-and-so card. I know that's the dark side of collecting, but has never happened.
Well, listen, when you work for a place like Tops, people ask you for a lot of things. Mm. So I've been asked for tickets and cards and you name it. And, you know, it's flattering how much people think I am connected. especially working in our events or the event side of Tops. And one of my dear, dear friends, Jillian Gross, is a phenomenal events manager. She took the Tops events from being in a hotel ballroom to these, you know, phenomenal activations in crazy places, like, you know, being on the field at stadiums for happy hour and whatnot. But Tops has what's called a Transcendent line of products. It's the most premium, you know, product that you can find out there for Tops. And with this, you know, immaculate case of cards comes a ticket to a meet and greet with a player and a dinner and a really, you know, unique kind of experience that you can only get by purchasing Transcendent. And so I've been to quite a few of the Tops Transcendent events, one of which was, you know, Derek Jeter's event, and, you know, some of the others like Cal Ripken and Mo. But, you know, those cards specifically, I think, are just worth an incredible amount of money. They have a gold frame around them. They're oftentimes Hall of Famers, you know, that are signing these cards. So that is, you know, people managed to think I could get them into a Transcendent event, which was not the case. I barely got in. I had to weasel my way in by saying that I would, you know, put the tablecloths on the tables and help out with the Q&A and anything that they could possibly need me to do in order to be in these Tops Transcendent events. But you would serve. The events team at Tops is phenomenal. Yeah,
I'll do drinks. You'd serve,
please. Yeah, put me to work in the kitchen, whatever you need. So yeah, being in some of these events was really just incredible, and a lot of times it's where I got to meet folks like Mattingly and you name it, because we would take some of their time, prior to them doing the Q&A with the folks at the event to actually do some dedicated time for our content series. So it was really neat. But yeah, the event side of things is also, a premium experience from Tops. So not necessarily people asking me for specific cards, but the experiences that Tops can also bring. I think folks thought I'd be able to weasel them in there, and I barely made it on the list. So
So Jeff, don't ask for any favors, Jeff.
No. I mean, I was just thinking about the kids who are trying to get into buy cards today, you know, to try to meet their heroes, and there's no way they're going to be able to afford to go to any of these events. So it's nice when they get autographs, you know, in the stadium or, you know, in the parking lot or whatever. When they it's a great thrill when they can meet their heroes, you know. Just like that.
Yeah, of course. I mean, spring training, right? And guys are so gracious at spring training. Guys, meaning the players, they stop, you know, for kids all the time and autograph everything. But you know, Tops has a whole different, you know, a whole run of products. Everything from, like I mentioned, the Transcendent line, which comes with its own, you know, event and whatnot, all the way down to, you know, products that are meant for kids, that are meant for those just starting collecting. So I think there's really the gamut of product, so that there's something for everyone at every price point at Tops. Yeah. And that's what makes it nice to see, kids getting into collecting, because there is stuff that they would be able to afford or be able to find and find just as much joy in ripping them open.
I got to tell you, when I was at Dodger camp a few years ago, AJ Pollock was there and he signed for every last person. And yeah. I thought that, and you know what? even though I'm an adult, I said, you know, I got to root for this guy wherever he goes because he's a good guy. You know, there's others who just, you know, wave people off. I can't. It's too, but he spent every last minute he could and accommodate everybody. That's
it's unbelievable. Some of these guys are, you know, you're a consummate professional on the field. You are able to be this elite athlete and perform at the highest level. And then to extend that, you know, beyond the baselines, beyond the base paths is you really have to have an appreciation for those guys because they know that it's bigger than them, right? It's for the fans. It's for spreading the love of this game that people come to watch them and they kind of return that favor in a way that they interact with the fans. So yeah, really neat. And, you know, Pollock's a great guy, but you know, hearing that is, you know, nice for someone like me, because oftentimes, you know, especially on social media, which is where I live for my job, you hear about the bad stuff, right? You hear about all the negative things and this and that. And you know, it's unfortunate that sometimes one bad apple can ruin the bunch, but you know, there's so many great stories of guys going out of their way to sign autographs, to do good in their communities, to help out, you know, anywhere around the world. I mean, they have causes that they care about passionately, and you really see the human side of baseball players, you know, outside of the field or, you know, beyond the lines of the field. So it's yeah, it's a great position, you know, to be in for me, because I like to see that, yeah, these guys, like I said before, they're human just like us, right? They have interests, they have families, they have hobbies, they have kids, they have, you know, whatever. And it's the fact that they put so much time simply into making it to this level, and then they put even more time to staying there and making sure that the fans can have such a great experience when they come out to the ballpark. I mean, that's what more can you say about that, right? That's just the consummate professional on and off the field.
Absolutely. You know, you mentioned social media where you live. You know, there's a couple of accounts that I follow. Sometimes they put up a baseball card, and I can tell it's like from the 60s or 70s, and I can tell it's always taken at Shea Stadium, because that's where Topps was located in New York City. And I guess they would take the photographer to just go to the stadium to take when the players came in, or Yankee Stadium, but they wouldn't travel. It was always, all the cards were in New York.
Right. That's pretty funny. Yeah, I think Topps was originally in Brooklyn, Montgomery Street in Brooklyn. And you know, what's cool too is a couple of years I went with Topps down to spring training, and they now have, you know, photographers out at all the ballparks during spring training. So to watch, you know, the whole process of the photographers shooting these guys, and then, you know, a couple months later you see that exact pose or that exact shot printed on a baseball card. It's really a cool kind of thing to watch. But yeah, that's pretty funny about Shea Stadium. I guess they now are actually traveling to the ball players to right. to take their photos in one swoop at spring training.
So now you're working for the Players Association, and you're in communications digital marketing, you said. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I assume you're enjoying that so much.
Yes, of course. Like I said, I mean, my postgraduate internship at the PA, it left such a profound effect on me. Seeing, you know, the way that the union has helped ballplayers take control of, you know, their own kind of fate and destiny in the game, and the strength of the players standing together. It's really, you know, the solidarity of it is inspiring stuff. But on the, you know, more of the media side, and I know that I'm sure you two can relate to this, but being able to allow the players to kind of control their own narrative, I think is one of the most rewarding parts of the job, because, you know, you have a bad start, and then you come in and you immediately have a million cameras in front of your face wanting to know why you blew up in a certain inning or whatever it might be. But with the Players Association, you know, although we're still trying to create content and come at it from a unique angle, we want the players to be the voices of our social pages. So I'm hopeful that, you know, one of the accounts that you follow, even though we don't always post baseball cards, is at MLBPA. But, you know, the video content that we create is all so that the guys can really take control of the narrative. And it's a safe place for them to do so, because you can't control what the media writes about you. You can't control, you know, the external factors and the reporters, but with the Players Association and specifically our digital and social media teams, you can find that to be a safe space to tell your story. And so that's why guys do like chatting with us, which is, you know, just a really nice part of the job. While I'm not necessarily sitting at the bargaining table, I am helping guys by allowing them to tell their stories in their own words and feeling like they have a safe space to do so. So that's rewarding for me.
Well, Annalee, we thank you for your time. I got one more question for you. And I know there's the Major League Baseball Players Association where you work, but there's also it recently came out the MLB Players Alliance. What is the difference with the two different organizations, I guess, for the same players? Could you explain the difference?
Yeah. The Players Alliance is for Black current and former players, is from what I understand. So they are, you know, there is, it's a shame the, and this year especially, it's evident how little Black player representation there is in our game. And it's so important that we change that. And so the Players Alliance really stemmed out of that, out of these initiatives of wanting to grow the game specifically in, you know, these communities, minority communities and Black communities and what have you. So the Players Alliance, I believe it was player association support for the Alliance is kind of where the connection draws there. I believe we helped them spin up the Alliance and get their feet on the ground. I know MLB made a donation to them as well. But yeah, guys like Curtis Granderson are involved, and it's really just being a representation of Black players, whether they're current or former. So that's the Players Alliance. And, you know, the PA itself has so many of these youth initiatives that they're a part of. One that's upcoming, which I'm personally really excited to go to, is the Swingman Classic, which is happening in Seattle during All-Star. But it's an all-star game for collegiate players that go to HBCUs, which is really neat. You know, that these guys get the opportunity to play on a stage of this nature, you know, during All-Star weekend. And so it's really important that the Players Association or Players Alliance or the MLBPA Youth Development Foundation, that they support these types of initiatives so that way we can grow the game. So no matter where you're from or what you look like or who you are, you can play baseball. And so a lot of that has spun up, you know, from the will and the want to grow the game. The Hank Aaron Invitational is another, you know, great example of that, where these kids that are, you know, all Black teams, they get to hear from guys that look like them that have played the game. So it's really cool to watch some of this stuff. And, you know, I'm hopeful that some of these initiatives that are happening now are only going to benefit the game in the future.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. We all love baseball. That's one thing for sure. And the game, even though there's some people say with the change of the rules, whatever, it's changed, obviously. But one thing that'll never change is our love for baseball, and that will never change. So thank you so much, Annalee. Tell us your social media, if anybody or any accounts people should follow from social media, please let us know.
Yeah, of course. Twitter specifically is where you can find me if there's any Twitter folks on here, at EJ Kless, KLESS. And, you know, of course, I'd be remiss to say, give us a follow at MLBPA as well, so you can see some of our video content. But thank you, guys. I've had a pleasure, you know, it was a pleasure chatting with you. And it sounds like we need episode 2 to talk about barbecue, because my stomach was rumbling before we got on here and we never got to barbecue. But maybe we'll save that for next time.
You got it.
We definitely will. And we thank you for joining us. And we have to thank two important people, and that is Doreen and Jeff, for introducing us to you. We are so thankful, because you have been a delight, and we can't wait till the next time we get to speak to you.
Yes.
Appreciate it, guys.
Thank you very much.
Hi, this is Gary Mack of the Mets Musings podcast. And if you like barbecue and you like baseball, then you have to listen to Baseball and BBQ with Jeff and Len. They always have the best guests from the world of baseball and the world of barbecue, all in one little package. So check it out. Baseball and BBQ with Len and Jeff. Okay, guys, take it away.
Thank you, Emily. We really appreciate it. What a wonderful career in baseball she's having. Right, Jeff?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
The travel that she's doing, her work with Topps, now her work with the MLB Players Association. And also, we said it during the interview or after, but we special thank you to Doreen and Jeff. We really do appreciate that you guys, you know, got us in touch with Emily. And we thank you. Jeff, I just want to mention to everyone that baseballbbq.com is the number one place to get your grilling tools and accessories. Baseball bat handles. Jeff, I showed it to someone. I work with someone whose dad had a birthday coming up. And I showed it to him. And the first thing he said was, "My dad would love this." I said, "Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. You got to get." And he's like, "Well, okay." He's trying to figure out which, you know, should he get him the tongue? Should he get him the home plate cutting board, whatever? So baseballbbq.com, check out their website. You will not be sorry. And Jeff,
absolutely. Yes.
How do people get in touch with this show?
I'm glad you asked. There's several ways you can do that. You can email us baseballmbbq@gmail.com. Give us a phone call, 516-855-8214. Leave a comment on our Facebook page, Baseball MBBQ. We have a Twitter. We have an X at Baseball MBBQ.
We have an X.
Instagram, Baseball and Barbecue, where barbecue is all spelled out. Our website is www.baseballandbbq.weebly.com. And please rate, review, all that fun stuff. And Leonard, you know, the other day we were talking about meeting Ed Randall, and he did give us some material. And I do want to pass this along to our listeners because it's a very important cause.
Please.
He runs a website called fansforthecure.org, which is for prostate cancer. And there's a new thing going on now called Catch for the Cure. Catch for the Cure, or The Catch, is our new and ongoing initiative to engage and support prostate cancer community. The Catch is like a peer-to-peer 5K or 10K run, only without running. Participants are asked to recruit a partner, grab a baseball glove and a ball, or just a ball, and simply have a catch. As with the 5K and 10K races, those engaging in the catch will be asked to solicit financial support for their efforts from friends, family, and colleagues, all proceeds of which will help fund the annual programming of Fans for the Cure. So please go to fansforthecure.org/The Catch. Get involved. It's a very important organization. We want to stamp out prostate cancer. Please support this initiative. Leonard, who do you have up next?
Well, Jeff, before we do that, we do have something next.
The barbecue quote of the week.
A great barbecue is a tribute to the backyard heroes who put in the hours to perfect their craft. That is Tuffy Stone.
Oh, Jeff, nice one.
That's very true. How many hours do you slave away in your backyard cooking barbecue? We love it. I think that's a great quote by Tuffy. And now, boy, that's a lot of podcasts. But
yeah,
we have a special second guest. We already told you. And it is Raymond Sheehan. And he is the son, as we said, of our good friend Ray Sheehan, and he is going to talk all about the future of Q. You might remember and recognize this voice. We had a really great interview with our guest way back at a special place, a special restaurant called Ray's Roadside Kitchen. This person that we have with us, this is Raymond Sheehan. He's the person behind that great restaurant, the great food. We are very excited to have with us Raymond Sheehan. That's right. I said Raymond. It's not Ray. It's Raymond. He is the son of Ray Sheehan, but he is forging a path in barbecue, and we're going to talk about it. We're going to hear what he's doing. We're going to talk about this publication that he's involved with. So, Raymond, welcome to Baseball and Barbecue.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So really what we want to have you on is to talk about is your music career, because right. you're quite the musician, aren't you?
Yeah, I'd hope so.
You like to strum the six strings, huh?
Is it six? It's
yeah.
Okay. Yeah. We had on with us Sterling Ball. My son, who is, I mean, he likes eating barbecue, but he doesn't want to cook it. But when I told him we had Sterling Ball on, that was the guest that he actually perked up and said, wait, you have Sterling Ball? So does that impress you, Raymond?
Yes, it does.
Okay. All right. So, Raymond, we had on Kel Phelps. Kel Phelps has something coming out, which you are involved with, called The Future of Q.
That's right.
Yeah. So tell us about The Future of Q and how you got involved with it and what you're going to be doing.
Well, The Future of Q is a magazine, well, a digital magazine starting off as digital for younger, like teenagers, and to get involved with barbecue media and grilling and cooking. And it's a way for them to share their experiences with cooking, grilling, and barbecue, and to share different recipes, just to get the exposure to the younger generation. My dad sent me they posted on Facebook, the National Barbecue News posted on Facebook saying that they're doing this project and the steps to get to contribute to it. So I wrote up a bio, I shared a recipe that me and my dad did, these Oreo bacon wraps.
Smoked. Those are so good. I'm sorry. I don't mean to interrupt, but oh, are those good? Okay.
They keep are going. Really very. And I wrote up an article about my experience with grilling and what got me into it for the first issue to like give the readers a glimpse of what my experience, what got me into it.
Very good. Very good. So you're going to be writing recipes and stories for Future of Q.
Correct.
Right. Yes. All right. Anything, any preview you want to show, tell us? I know the issue is starting in mid-July. So you might have, do you have something in mind that's going to be on that first issue?
Yes. I sent in, the smoked Oreo bacon wrap recipe, but I also wrote this, not really crazy long, but about 600 words about basically the impact the restaurant had on my path, my grilling habits, and how it got me more involved and more into it. Because, I started cooking at the restaurant in the last 2 months that we were open for. That really enlightened me more in the field of grilling and also the atmosphere of the kitchen, which I talk about in what I wrote for the first issue. For the Future of Q, I talk about how, when I was little, I grill with my dad, and how that like really exposed me to it. And I had an interest in it a couple years ago. I started grilling more and more. And then the restaurant came around, and I ended up asking grill cook. His name is Ryan. And I ended up asking him one day, I said, could you mind if you showed me a couple things? And he did. And then it ended up, funny enough, it ended up where he actually would just do random stuff that needed to get done and would let me cook on the grill. And especially the last month, I was just on the grill all the time I was in there, and it was really fun and it was great and good learning experience too, especially working with others.
You've been around barbecue and grilling your whole life. In fact, you are featured in your dad's books, taking pictures in cookbooks that he's had. He has two of them out, and you're featured in them. So that's pretty cool.
It is really cool. When we were doing the photo shoot for those books, the photographer, his name is Ken, and he said, he's like, you want to be in a couple pictures? And I was like, yeah. And I was 12 years old when the first book came out, 11 or 12. I don't remember exactly, something like that. And I was in, you see me in some of those recipes. I was in the next book too for a few shots, which was cool to be able to be in both books. And if any more come out, I'd be more than happy to hop.
Raymond, what is it about barbecue that you particularly like?
The food is great. Food is one of the best parts. Also the atmosphere, because everyone who does it is always like, there's not a lot of people who are antisocial that are like barbecuing. It's like a social activity for a lot of people. They go and they invite people over and they have a smoker and they're out there for hours and hours, smoking the meat, and then they go to competitions, and it's the same kind of atmosphere, just more people. And that's one of my favorite parts about it, is the atmosphere. Also spending time with my family. if we ever invite people over, that's also fun too. It's funny, that's really the only time we ever do invite people over. So, you know, it's good to get involved and get involved with that. And especially, I also like the whole process of, you know, you have to like take the meat out, put some stuff on it, like apple juice, squirt it with apple juice to enhance the smoking process. And then just the whole thing. And then the prep too, there's a lot of prep that goes into it. I see my dad prepping the brisket, which takes about 3 hours. A lot of work, but it all ends up, it's rewarding in the end.
Do you think you're going to do the competition circuit before, you know, you settle into your career? You think you can do a couple of competition just to feel it out?
Yeah, I don't have anything against it. When I was around 10 years old, I was going to do a grilling, like a kids' queue grilling competition, but then it rained. It had a bad storm. They canceled it. And then for the next 2 years in a row, the same thing happened. It was disappointing at the time. If something like that ever came around again, I would love to do it, you know, just to see where I place in the other people that are also interested like me.
Now, is this something you want to make a career out of? Do you want to open a restaurant one day, or do you want to, geez, there's so many options. You could be a Food Network superstar and have your own show.
Well, you know, the time I spent working in a restaurant was, I would say that's the happiest I've been working, mm-hmm. No matter what I was doing, whether that's washing dishes, being a prep cook, being a line cook, it was all fun. And down the road, if someone came to me tomorrow and said, you can work at this restaurant or this place, I would take it because that's how much I like to do it. You know,
okay.
Let's say music doesn't work out. I would 100% own a restaurant and just do full time. There's plenty of musicians that own restaurants, like Bon Jovi owns his restaurant. And I forget where it is, but the Soul Kitchen, I believe it's called. And he does that. I mean, he's not there all the time, but, you know, it's his restaurant. Right. And that could something like me, you know, that I could do that.
Jimmy Buffett has a as a franchise of Margaritaville's around.
you could be Dave Grohl, right? And he shows up and makes barbecue for the masses and then packs up and, right? Yeah. That's right. I like that, though. If the music doesn't work out, like if I don't become a rock star, and I could see you're from Jersey, right? So there's certainly some famous Springsteen, Bon Jovi.
The best people come out of New Jersey.
Exactly.
Sinatra came out of New Jersey. So Ray, you might be able to be the entertainment and own the restaurant.
Yeah.
That's true. He could perform. That's right. You could perform. You could entertain people. You know, well, there's a restaurant that we like to go to. All of a sudden, I can't remember the name of it, but the chef is a trained opera singer, and he comes out and he sings. I'm not saying do this, but he comes out and he sings "Happy Birthday" whenever it's someone's birthday. Comes out and the chef's out and stuff. So Ray comes out and
Raymond, besides the fried cookie with bacon wrap, what's your specialty? What do you consider your specialty?
Well, for grilling, I'd like to think that and people have told me this, so it's not just me. It's not my own personal opinion about myself, but I love to get the charcoal grill, and I grill a nice New York strip steak on the charcoal grill, but I put some cherry wood near the coals so then it starts to smoke in the grill and then it comes back down into the meat and then it makes it such a good flavor in my opinion, but people have told me that they really like it. So that's for now, anyways, something like that. That's what I would consider my special.
There's nothing like a steak on the grill. That's for sure.
A couple months, I'll share something with the magazine. That's a recipe. That's, you know,
You know, it's interesting because your dad obviously is Ray Sheehan, a couple of cookbooks. He's a well-known. I tell your dad, the only thing that separates him from being one of these guys that everybody knows, we all know the main names, right, that are on these shows, is the fact that he has not yet been on a TV show.
That's true, yeah.
Once he's on a show, he will then be known and people will, they will definitely... He'll be well known. Let's put it that way.
Consider him one of the main names.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's just a matter of time. You know, I mean, he's right. Like locally, he's known. Like, you know, right. People in the barbecue world know him. Right. But it's just a matter of if he gets on one of these shows and.
Right.
He's also a main contributor to the Barbecue News magazine. So, right.
Yes.
He's well known.
But where I was going with that is you could have gone one of two ways. You could have gone the opposite way. It's like, you know what? I've had enough of this. I don't want to have anything to do with this. Or what you are doing, and that is the fact that you're embracing it. You've got a great mentor. You're learning from him. And that's a great thing. So it's a special thing for a father and son to do that together. So that must be really great.
Yeah, it is. You know, this is finally something that like will drive the both of us. Like before it was just like, if you want to, you know, but now it's like actually there, you know, something to actually like work towards. And with like the restaurant, there was some of that, but it's hard to say, but it wasn't like me controlling it and learning from him. It was doing what was on the menu and stuff like that. But not that that was a bad thing. It was good. It was good to learn. But now mm-hmm. I feel like it's a great opportunity to be able to create recipes and share them with people in the Barbecue News and, well, you know, the Future Q, and also have him, my dad, to teach me stuff that like different techniques that well I can carry on.
What year are you in school?
I'm going to be going into my junior year.
So you start thinking about after high school at this point, right?
Yeah, thinking of something in music. I want to major in something in music.
Okay.
Composition or guitar performance.
So the first love is music.
Yes.
Okay. All right. That's okay, right? That's okay. Your first love is music and second love is barbecue. Those are two. Baseball, barbecue, and music. That would work.
Well, you certainly be popular once you get to college, you know, playing music, even cooking for the barbecue. I mean, you'll have a lot of people around you, that's for sure.
You mentioned cooking on charcoal. I know your dad's got a bunch of cookers.
So yes.
What's your favorite that you like to cook on?
Well, for charcoal, I have a Weber kettle, which is, you know, this like you look up a picture of a charcoal grill. That's the first one that comes up. That's the one that I did have a Chef Mate charcoal grill for some time. And that was my first introduction to having my own grill. It's not the kettle style. It's it looks like a smoker, to mm-hmm. say that, to give you the best description of it. It looks like a smoker. And that was my first introduction to it. And then I got the Weber kettle, and that's my favorite one to cook on for charcoal wise, because that's just, it's reliable. Don't have to worry about it falling apart. Has an enamel covering, so it doesn't have to be covered. You can just be washed off and you don't have to worry about rust. It's the perfect thing to just, if you want to grill, but you're not like, for like people who don't have the covered deck and don't have all the covers for the grill, the Weber kettle would probably be your best bet, because you could just leave it out, expose it to the elements for years, and nothing bad will happen to it. It's a great grill.
Raymond, being baseball and barbecue, it's interesting that this is something that touches on both. A lot of times in baseball, they'll talk about the next generation of fans and how baseball's losing fans and they need to speed up the game because the younger generation likes their attention span's not that long and all these mm-hmm. different things, right? And barbecue, you often hear, you know, barbecue is kind of, what's the next generation going to do now? Kel and Janet Phelps, you know, with this Future of Q, are doing their part to promote it to the younger generation. Besides what they're doing with the digital publication, do you have any ideas for things that you think, you know, people your age or younger, a little older, they might do or consider to keep barbecue as a popular thing?
You know, if I'm ever on like social media and I see a video of someone talking about this meat they smoked and like there's a couple people who like promote their own seasoning. that I've seen over the last few years. And they show like how they make a brisket and how they put it on the smoker, and you know, and they cut it all down to probably about 30 seconds to keep the attention span of the younger generation. And I think that's a great way to get more people exposed, is although it is a very long activity, takes hours, mm-hmm. like six right. hours, you know, you're out there for a while because lighting it up, smoking the meat, and you know, it's a whole thing. Aside from that, if you put it, if you take it, it's like a promotional thing for barbecue. You know, you promote it, and you promote it with 30 seconds of showing the process, and it can get people excited. It's turning something that's, some may consider long and boring, into something that's short, even though it's not, but showing them in a short way how to do everything. And look at the comments, and people seem interested in it. Right. Like younger people seem interested in it. And whether they wouldn't be seeing someone just standing there for 8 hours. But I think that if you get more and more people interested in it, and then they actually do it and they find it like relaxing, like fishing, you know, you're out there on the water for 7 hours, some people, and they catch maybe one fish. It's because it's relaxing.
No, I was going to say Len likes to relax doing a long, slow smoke. That's his relaxation.
Yeah, why not?
And barbecue is relaxing to some people. And I feel like if they just try it once, they'll like it, you know, and if they don't, they don't. But if you get more and more people to try and like it, then that gets the younger generation involved, and then it becomes a big thing again.
You know, it's funny. When Jeff and I were growing up, the joke was always our father's barbecue was undercooked, raw, burn on the outside chicken, burgers that weren't cooked through, or hot dogs that were, you know, burnt to a crisp, or I hate to say this, but ribs that were boiled and then, you know, put on the grill and whatever there was. But now your generation, because we're all into barbecue, I would hope your generation doesn't say that about your father's barbecue. I just hope you guys build upon it and improve.
Yeah. About the young generation, we have so many resources to go off of to learn how to cook and grill and barbecue, that like you could look up something on YouTube of someone who knows what they're doing and learn, or get it. Like, you don't have to rely on other things. Like, it's all in your hand. Like, it's all like one Google search and you're there and you know right. what to do. And I feel like that's also a good contributing factor for like the younger generation.
Let's talk music for a moment.
Yeah.
Okay, you're a big musician, and I heard you play on Facebook. You're quite good. So
thanks.
And who do you, what are the groups that you like to listen to? Who are your music influences?
I love Bruce Springsteen.
Okay.
Big surprise, being from Jersey.
What's your favorite Bruce song?
Gotta
it's
go.
Hard, right?
No Surrender is a good Bruce song.
Okay.
Born to Run, Thunder Road, Jungle Land has a great sax solo. So many great ones. I think he's has a great musical mind. Someone that didn't really go to school for music at all.
Right. You know, it's a great Bruce song. And people will say, what, are you crazy? But his Christmas song, the one he does, you know, with where he says, "Hey, Clarence, what is, have you been good this That's year or cool. whatever? You know, you better watch out."
Yeah.
That's always just a fun song to hear.
It is, because he hyped it up into something that, you know, like how many musicians do that, like at a rock concert. And even now he's 73 and still jumping around up there. He's on a world tour right now and he's selling out arenas. That doesn't happen. Most people, they can sell them out when they're young, but then when they get up there in age, then they just flatline and end up playing at smaller places. And being that he's kept that over the years is great.
Personally, I like Glory Days because it makes a reference to baseball.
That's good. Yeah. Yeah. Did you see the interview that he did with Howard Stern?
I saw part of it. I never listened to the whole thing, but surprised he waited this long to go on to the show.
Yes. Right. That was interesting that he waited that long, but yeah, Glory Days is, Jeff, that's true. That's a, that is a good one. All right. So Bruce Springsteen, give us another of your influences who you like to listen to.
I am a big Meatloaf fan. I feel like even though he like the stage presence, you know, and like he gets into a different character for almost every single song. Like it leaves you with something. Like you go to see a show, but it's a play in so many, in like thinking of it like that, it can be portrayed as a play. And that's why, and I love his stage presence really is great. Was great.
I'm thinking maybe Barry Manilow is not one of your influences.
not crazy about him, but he's not bad.
Okay. What about Queen? You know, you talk about Meatloaf being, you know, I'm thinking Freddie Mercury.
I am a big fan of Queen. One of my favorite bands. I feel like even when Freddie Mercury was even in his bad health, like towards the end of his life, he still had that voice that just shook, could still like shake stadiums. It was great. He was a great vocalist and so much talent in that band. The guitarist built this guitar with his dad out of pieces of wood from his fireplace because he couldn't afford to buy an actual guitar. The education on them, the guitarist is an astrophysicist.
Right. Brian May, right?
Yes, Brian May. And then the drummer, Roger Taylor, has a degree in dentistry. And both Freddie Mercury and the band that Queen was with, Brian May and Roger Taylor, were in a band called Smile before Freddie Mercury joined the group. And they had a lead singer for that band, and he had a degree in graphic design, and so did Freddie Mercury, I believe, or design in general. So they all had like great educations, musical educations, all very talented. And it shows with their numbers that of like albums that they sold. And like, even now the lead singer is no longer alive. He passed away in 1991, but now they're touring with Roger Taylor and Brian May are touring with Adam Lambert.
Yeah.
To be still selling out Madison Square Garden with a different singer shows that you know how to write. I feel
well. That's interesting because you talk about Queen and a different singer, and that brings me to the Grateful Dead. Are you a Dead fan at all?
Not terribly. You know, I'm not terribly a Grateful Dead fan.
Okay, but they have John Mayer is, you know, they just did their final tour, Dead and Co. All right. So what about current music? You know, like, is there a group? Is there music that maybe we've never heard of? Because current music, probably there's tons. My son introduces me to bands that I've never heard of.
There's, you know, current music, the mainstream thing that like a lot of people are listening to now is rap. Rap is the big thing right now. It's like in the 80s, it was hair metal for a part of time. And now rap is the popular thing. I'm not a big fan of modern music. Well, I shouldn't say that, modern rap music, but there's plenty of bands that just go unnoticed. And there are bands that are trying, and there are bands that have like a 90s grunge style or a 80s rock style that just are going like right over people's heads right now. They're not catching up. But then you have people like Ed Sheeran, who is just him singing, and people like that. Like his music, and it's not fast. It's like Ed Sheeran has some slow love songs that like have millions of streams on streaming services. I think he's talented. I think Ed Sheeran's talented. I feel like my personal opinion is that the music industry is always controlled by what sells. It's not like parts of it are controlled about by what sells. So if you have something that no matter what time period it is, whether it was 50 years ago or now, if you sing something to certain people in the industry and they think that it can sell and they can make big money off of you, then they'll give you a deal. And that's how some people are where they are today in music. And that's why there are actually talented people that won't really make a ton of money going right over people's heads. But maybe someday that won't matter and they'll end up, because that's true for some people. It doesn't matter for some people.
Right.
Because as long as you get it out there, as long as it's good, people will hear it and they'll like it.
All right. So I'm going to let Jeff wrap this up, but I'm going to ask you one more question.
Sure.
It's music and barbecue related. As you're cooking that steak and that cherry wood, the smoke is coming down on it and you're playing some music. What kind of music are you playing as you're cooking that steak?
Like listening to music or if I'm
No, you are playing. What kind of music style would you describe your style?
I would say soft rock. Like if it's just me and an acoustic guitar, that's it, right? I would say soft rock or acoustic rock, you know?
Okay.
Or just acoustic in general. Mellow to kind of, I can't think of it. I don't know, you know, if there's a word for it, but I guess it would be just acoustic rock.
All right. Well, you better cook it fast because you know the steak's going to cook. I mean, you better play it fast because that steak's going to cook fast. you got to have a song for a brisket and a song for a steak.
Well, Raymond, we really thank you for your time. Best of luck with you with your music career, your cooking career, and your writing career with The Future of Q. If you want to tell people how they can get The Future of Q, let us know, please.
Well, the Barbecue News, the National Barbecue News, is putting out a digital magazine called The Future of Q. And you can go to the National Barbecue News website.
Okay. And you can sign up there for that?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
We're looking forward to seeing many incredible things from you. Just this has been a very enjoyable time speaking to you, and makes me want to. I want to go grab a steak and listen to some Bruce.
Thank you so much for having me. I had a great time.
Thank you very much, Raymond. And we like to thank Raymond Sheehan for coming on Baseball and BBQ. He is the future of Q.
You know, I hope Ray doesn't get upset because this is said tongue in cheek, but. Ray who? I know Raymond Sheehan. It's now Ray Sheehan is you know, he's the father of the barbecue person, you know? I mean, now it's Raymond. So music, you know, I have a feeling, Jeff, that Raymond is going to do whatever Raymond does. He'll be like we mentioned, Dave Grohl. He's going to be the musician that just, he'll come to the concert. People will be tailgating. He'll bring his smoker. They'll be like, wait, aren't you Raymond Sheehan? Aren't we seeing you in that 50,000 seat arena in like 2 hours? You know? Yeah, but I thought I'd cook with you guys. He's just great. He's really a great kid. And I don't even want to call him a kid. He's, you know, but he is the future of Q. So thank you very much to Raymond. Thank you to Emily. And thank you to our listeners, because I want to tell everybody that we are brought to you by Bet Online. It is where the game starts, but you know, we're not starting, we are ending. And Jeff, how are we going to end episode 198?
With the song
by the poet Shel Krakowski and the musician Dave Dresser. What is the song?
Baseball always brings you home. I tried to slip you up there. We'll see you next time on episode 199.
Best of all is when I